This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Wheat markets sharply higher on Tuesday, leading to grains and oilseeds sharply higher across the board amid more tensions between Russia and Ukraine. Welcome into Market Talk. Thank you so much for joining us once again. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to be here as we take a look at what's happening in the market, trade, and issues impacting rural America. We saw the wheat market scream higher on Tuesday. The highest close in Chicago wheat in over 2 months was seen on Tuesday. KC wheat, spring wheat, Minneapolis, all sharply higher, and that was helping to pull corn and beans higher on Tuesday session as well. Beans, some good support there, good demand being seen. Corn market moving higher as well, even amid harvest pressure picking up here across the country. We have plenty to talk about on today's show. Jim McCormick, AgMarket.net. He's going to join us coming up in segment two and three to discuss the markets across the board. I know we'll have a lot to discuss regarding what's going on in the wheat market after Tuesday's session, as well as the entire grain sector. I know we'll be talking about the Federal Reserve meeting going on this week with that expected interest rate increase from the Fed coming on Wednesday. Plenty to discuss. Jim McCormick going to join us coming up here in segment two and three to talk about the markets and give us his take on what he is seeing. But first up, though, again, wheat markets screamed higher on the day on Tuesday. Sharp gains seen there amid Russia announcing plans to hold votes in parts of eastern Ukraine to annex those parts into Russia. And that's really escalating tensions once again, and a lot of concerns there about what could happen moving forward. And plenty of that really spilled into the markets, gave us a lot of risk on trade in grains and oilseeds on the day on Tuesday. I talked with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at Stone X, about everything going on in the market trade. Around midday on Tuesday, got Arlen's thoughts on what happened in the wheat market Tuesday amid the Russia-Ukraine tensions. He explains those more. We talk a little bit as well about the livestock trade and more. Here is that commentary with Arlen Suderman of Stone X.
The world has started to become accustomed to wheat and corn shipments coming out of Ukraine once again, albeit at a slower pace. It's still helping us get by, so to speak. That all seems to be at risk right now with Russia announcing that it's going to hold referendums in occupied territories of Ukraine this weekend to let people there vote if they want to be annexed into Russia. I think we all know how those referendums are going to be announced, or the results of those referendums are going to be, regardless of how people vote. The thinking is that Russia is going to say that people want to be part of Russia. And what that does, according to state media from Russia, is totally unties Russia's hands to use all means possible and necessary in order to win this war. And right now, it's primarily considered a special military operation that it leans heavily on its voluntary forces, but that would really allow it to widen the scope of the war significantly and could therefore threaten more shipments of corn and wheat and oilseeds coming out of that Black Sea region. So prices escalating sharply as a result this morning.
Well, I know as well, stocks under pressure on Tuesday amid the Fed meeting starting up and expecting that basis point increase on Wednesday. I also wonder, with stocks under pressure with that Fed meeting news out there, are we seeing maybe a little bit of money flow in as a hedge against inflation here into the grain commodities, Arlen?
Well, certainly it works as that, but I think the bigger concern right now is a recession trade. And that's a valid question, but as we look at the money flow, the funds seem to be more worried about recession. Now, what we've been watching for is as the grain and oilseed balance sheets have been tightening up, and yesterday's crop progress report did that further. My corn yield model now has dropped below 170 bushels for corn for this year. As those balance sheets tighten up, we've been watching for when we might see a headline that might shock the fund managers into back trading the fundamentals and an inflation trade. If you look at the outside markets, you look at the energy markets, the equities, as you mentioned, they're all trading recession fears. But today that money seems to be coming back into grain and oil seeds based on fears that food inflation may be returning if this war escalates.
Arlen, as well, over in the livestock trade, fairly choppy action again there on Tuesday, it appears. Feeder cattle falling back with corn moving higher. Live cattle trade holding in there while the hog trade's just been fairly mixed. It just feels like we're kind of chopping around here with all the other factors weighing in from the outside markets, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the decreased demand for feeder cattle with higher feed prices, definitely a factor. When you look at the protein sector, it's holding up pretty well considering the weakness in the equity markets, concerns about the economy. We're seeing some stabilizing product prices now for pork and stabilizing cash prices there, something we haven't seen for a while where they had been trending lower and the funds have pretty well liquidated a lot of their positions. And so seeing some stability there in the lean hog market. On the cattle market, expectations of tightening supplies, keeping the money flow calm, quietly, if you will, or cautiously is maybe a better word, if you will, but still positive money flow. Traders reluctant to be short the live cattle complex with supplies tightening in the quarters ahead.
And again, that's commentary with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX, around midday on Tuesday, giving us his take on the market action we saw during Tuesday's session. Well, alfalfa can help corn growers, according to Randy Welch of Winfield United. Corn-on-corn planting practices deplete nitrogen, but considering alfalfa, especially in dairy country, can help.
The value of that alfalfa is huge, and it produces probably somewhere between 120, maybe 140 units of nitrogen per rotation. Granted, the alfalfa has to be there for 3 years to get that credit, but you would have the chance to raise that 120 to 140 units of nitrogen, which would supply most of the nitrogen needed for our corn production the following year. And certainly if you're in a livestock farm where you put a dose of manure on there, you've got all the nitrogen that corn crop needs to produce a beautiful crop of corn, either for corn grain or for corn silage.
Welch says you can get nitrogen from alfalfa not just the following year, but the year after that.
You actually produce some of that alfalfa, that nitrogen comes out of that alfalfa, even a year later. So 2 years later, you're still pulling out somewhere between 30 to maybe 50 units of nitrogen even the following year. So the value of this alfalfa to a corn crop is huge. So if you're really raising any other grass crop, wheat would be included in this comment as well. But you've got a lot of nitrogen that's being produced by that alfalfa crop that's really a salvage value that no one really talks about.
And Welch says crop rotation and using alfalfa can break the cycle of corn rootworm.
Crop rotation is very important to crop management because if we can break that insect cycle or that disease cycle, then we have, you know, a healthier crop and a better outcome for that crop. We have a lot of very, very high rootworm populations in our corn this year, and that means that we're going to have more risk of rootworm lodging next year, or we have to plan for systems, both plant genetics and also insecticides, to control that rootworm population. Now, one of the ways you can control rootworms is to rotate to another crop. In the case of alfalfa, rootworms will not be hosted in alfalfa, so it's a great way to control rootworms is to rotate to alfalfa.
And again, that is Randy Welch of Winfield United. All right, coming up, we're going to talk more about the market trade action we saw on Tuesday. Plenty of news to discuss. Jim McCormick, AgMarket.net, he joins us next, back with more market talk on the way right after the break.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now as we take a look at the market trade action on Tuesday, a lot of risk on type trading led by these wheat markets amid more tensions between Russia and Ukraine. Here to tell us about what he saw in the market trade on Tuesday, Jim McCormick with AgMarket.net. Jim, good to have you back on the show, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Jim, thanks for the time. We have a lot to discuss. And as I mentioned, these wheat markets, I think it was close, or maybe it did get it. Chicago wheat, I think the highest close in 2 months or right around there on Tuesday. Just a lot of concern, a lot of tensions rising again. Not that they've fallen off between Russia, Ukraine, this talk of Russia annexing parts of eastern Ukraine. It just seems like that really spooked the wheat market, and traders really poured some money in there on Tuesday. Talk about what you saw and the issues that we see developing in the Black Sea region.
Well, what's going on, folks? There's four separatist regions. At the beginning of the war, they just said they were independent countries, in essence, independent of the Ukraine, but they were not part of Russia. Russia essentially said they acknowledged them there, but like I said, they weren't part of Russia. Well, here, the game plan has changed quite drastically in the last 24 hours. Now, the plan is for those four regions, in essence, to vote to become part of Russia. And by all accounts, you know, they're going to stack the vote. That's to be honest. They're going to make sure that vote goes the Russia way. And all of a sudden, those four regions are now essentially going to be declared part of the motherland, in essence, part of Russia, which now brings ratchets up the game, because now that's going to allow Russia or Putin to mobilize Russian troops, in essence, to defend the homeland, which now this gets a little bit more scary also in the fact that Russia has come out and pretty much said they're willing to use nuclear weapons to defend their country. Well, now it gets a little bit gray to the trade, is those four regions that were up until Friday were part of technically Ukraine. Now the Russians are going to say they're part of their country. What happens? I mean, remember, when we started giving the Ukrainians long-range weapons, we told them, hey, use them, but do not use them in essentially firing into Russia. So now what happens, the risk I think the market's worried about, is now those long-range weapons that technically are going into the separatist region today, which technically by Friday, according to Putin, they'll be going into what is now Russia. And what does that do to the escalation of this war? And plain and simple, that brought the war premium right back into the marketplace. Because remember, they're also trying to get this crop. They're just starting harvest of the, you know, of the corn and the sunflower and these other products, as well as trying to get this winter wheat crop planted. So this is probably not the best time in the world to reality to really ratchet up tensions, as the world is still trying to deal with a relatively tight food situation.
Very true. Well, and Jim, you know, looking at the sharp gains in wheat, it was across the board, Chicago, KC, Minneapolis, and all of it as well in the face of a higher U.S. dollar again on Tuesday, and the Federal Reserve meeting going on this week, which is, I know, a backdrop in these markets really weighed on the outside markets, the stocks and energies. But you mentioned that tight food supply. I mean, the balance sheets for wheat, corn, soybeans, everything is relatively tight. So taking that Ukrainian production away, giving it to Russia or whatever the case happens, I just can't imagine how detrimental that could be to global food supplies moving forward, to your point. So it feels like to me there's a lot of chance for this wheat market to add more premium as this situation continues on.
Well, exactly, because, you know, with the ratcheting up of the tensions, Jesse, now the question is, you know, will the food corridors stay, you know, open? You might remember last week we saw a little bit of a rally late in the week when Putin was meeting with the Turkish president as well with the Chinese president, and the debate was, would they keep those corridors open? Putin's not exactly, you know, he's complaining that not enough food's going to poor countries, it's going to Europe. Now, nothing happened, but with the ratcheting up of these tensions, and we have seen Putin use energy as a weapon, by blocking off the flow of energy on the Nord Stream pipelines. So, yeah, I mean, it is a legit problem right now. What the world is trying to decipher right now, Jesse, and the trade's trying to decipher, in a way, it's kind of a macro versus a micro type of situation. The micro being the overall supply. U.S. corn supplies, you know, looking at projected ending stocks at 1.2 billion bushels. The old line is small crops get smaller, big crops get bigger. Well, this crop got smaller in August to September. Statistically, it's like 70-80% chance that it's going to get smaller in October. Well, we've already cut demand by 570 million bushels. So that puts the carryout down to 1.2 billion, which really is essentially at pipeline levels. The bean carryout down to 200 million. It's not, we've been tighter, but it's definitely snugging up a little bit. But then you look at the macro picture, the Fed's raising interest rates. They're not the only ones raising interest rates. There's almost pretty much every central bank around the world is raising interest rates, trying to put this inflationary genie back in the bottle. That's driving up cost of everything, which tends to drive down demand, and hence the reason why they raise interest rates. They're trying to snuff out demand, but it's also going to have potentially have a negative demand impact on food demand potentially, is maybe people don't go out to eat, or you have to see hog herds liquidated. So it's a very, very volatile situation from day to day. Are they trading the macro front? Are they trading the micro front? We do need to keep an eye on the U.S. dollar right now, because it's pretty amazing. But right now, the U.S. is the most expensive wheat in the world. We're the most expensive corn in the world, and we're the most expensive beans in the world. As we speak today, if the dollar continues to march higher, it will just make us that much less competitive, which could be a problem down the line potentially.
Well, thinking about the macro versus micro factors in the broader grain sector, Jim, I'd love your thoughts on, does it feel like maybe the cash markets right now are doing the job of rationing demand as traders wrestle with the macro micro side from a day-to-day basis on the board?
I think you're definitely seeing it having a little impact in certain parts of the country more than others. There's no doubt about it. The elevator system is having a very hard time bridging from the old crop to the new crop. I know parts of Illinois right now, if you can get beans delivered in the next 48 hours, they're going to give you $1.85 premium in central Illinois for beans. But if you hold off 6 days later, you're getting 15 over the board. So you can see they're just having a very hard time bridging it. So the basis is doing the heavy lifting to try to get the grain to market. And then we'll see what happens. But yeah, I mean, because essentially, traditionally, what I'm worried about, and I think we could have seen more pressure in the market this week if it wasn't for this Russian story, because, the funds plowed into the market earlier in the year on the inflationary play. When the Fed started raising interest rates, they chased them all back out of the market. Now you look at it, they're starting to build back a little bit of built length, at least in the corn market, with the Fed anticipated to raise rates at least 0.75 point tomorrow. Some people think they could shock and awe us by another point. But I think no matter what they do tomorrow, the consensus is we'll be at about a 4% Fed fund rate by the end of the year. And, that's essentially telling the funds there's no reason to be long commodities as they're trying to snuff out this inflation. So it could be an interesting situation. If you're a producer out there, we're going to tell you to, be very flexible on the basis. Because, like I said, that may be what does a heavy lifting to try to bring grain to the board, like we're seeing right now in central Illinois as they're trying to bridge old to new. So it's going to be a very, very volatile season. I would guess, Jesse, just looking at where we're at, the basis is probably going to be a little bit better in the West compared to the East, because that is where we're seeing the shortages, plain and simple.
Jim, on the soybean side, soybeans started out and had Monday trade fairly solid. We saw a solid trade on Tuesday, of course. It feels like there's some good demand under the bean market, under products, meal, a little bit in bean oil. I heard some rumors China might have bought some cargoes off the PNW. As you look at this soy complex as a whole, does it feel like there's a little bit better of a demand story there right now, even amid a tight balance sheet here in the U.S.?
Well, right now, the beans are definitely kind of an interesting situation right now. This is the time of year traditionally we sell a lot of beans. If you look at historically in our export program, we tend to export a lot of beans this time of year. And then as we get into those late winter, spring, we tend to be a little bit more aggressive exporting corn, plain and simple. So we are seeing a little bit better demand on the beans. But what's interesting right now that we're waiting to see how it plays out is what's going on in Argentina. Argentina had a cash crunch, plain and simple. Their inflation is 100% inflation by some accounts. So the producers were refusing to sell grain. The government was running out of cash. Plain and simple, their reserves are down to about $2 billion. They needed a way to generate money to get a loan for the IMF. So they came out with this new soy peso. I'm sure you've mentioned in many over the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Well, that soy peso has done what it is meant to do. It has brought somewhere between 7.5 and 8 million metric tons of beans onto the market. And their estimates are they're going to sell up to 10 million metric tons of beans, which will give them about $5 billion, which is what the government's trying to do. Now, the real question, Jesse, is let's say they actually do sell 10 million metric tons of beans. Now, traditionally, they're not big bean exporters. They tend to sell meal and oil. So now they're selling the raw product instead of the meal and oil. And the question is, who's going to get shortchanged? So as the Chinese come in and buy 15, 20, 30 cargoes of the Argentina beans, are those 15, 20, 30 cargoes of beans that we would normally be selling to the Chinese and we're going to lose the business? Or is it going to be maybe the Brazilians that lose some of that business? But more than likely, there is going to be some lost business. So that's something we need to be a little bit cautious about on the demand front. So that may limit beans up near $15, at least temporarily on the board. Now, there is one positive note I could say about what's going on in Argentina. Like I said, they traditionally buy beans, the crushers do them, make meal and products and sell that on the open market. If they can't get their hands on the beans because they've sold it to the Chinese, Maybe that gives an opportunity to our crushers to crush more beans and sell some more beans and bean oil onto the world market. So there is a little bit of positive news to it, but it's something we need to be concerned about potentially lost demand.
Back with more from Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net right after this as Market Talk continues after the break.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
Well, welcome back to Market Talk. Thanks for joining us once again. Jesse Allen with you here in studio. Jim McCormick, AgMarket.net. He is our guest here today. Continuing to join us, we'll get back to our conversation with Jim coming up here in just a minute. Want to take a look first, though, at the closing market numbers from Tuesday, give you an idea of some of the sharp upward momentum we saw in the grain markets on Tuesday's session. Let's start with wheat. They were the winners on Tuesday. Chicago wheat, December, up 63 and a quarter, 893 and three quarters. That was a close at the high end of the range. March corn up 60 and three quarters at 907 and a quarter, just off the high of the day. May Chicago wheat up 59, 914 and three quarters. KC wheat, hard red winter wheat, December up 53 and a quarter, 963, just off the high of the day of 964. March KC wheat up 51 and a half, 959 and a half, with May KC wheat up 50 and a quarter, 957 and three quarters, just finishing off the highs of the day there in Kansas City wheat. Spring wheat, Minneapolis, December up 41, 959 and a quarter. March up 36, 962 and a quarter. And May spring wheat up 31, 963 and three quarters, all near the high end of the ranges on the day, just a couple cents off the highs. In the corn market, December corn up 13 and three quarters, 692. March corn up 13 and a quarter Tuesday, 696 and three quarters. May corn up 12 and three quarters at 697. Just off the highs in the corn contracts as well on the day Tuesday. Soybeans, November up 17 and a half, 1478 and three quarters. January beans up 17, 1484 and a half. March beans up 16 and a quarter, 1485 and a half. We were a little bit off the highs in the soybean complex. Bean meal, October up 1260 a ton, 450.80. December up 1010 a ton, 439.40. Soybean oil, October up 59 points, 68.59. December up 75 points, 65.91. We saw oats for December up 11, 413 and a quarter. March oats up 11, 416. Canola, November down $1 at 785.60. Also want to look in the quarter bean market real quick. December 23 corn, that was up 9 on Tuesday at 631. Meantime, November soybeans for 2023, that was up 9 on Tuesday, 1391 and three quarters. Looking over at the livestock trade on the day Tuesday, again, kind of chopped around in the cattle markets. We saw October live cattle up 57, 146.30. December up 17, 151.07. February live cattle down 5, 155.20. April down 2, 158.87. Feeder cattle September down 115, 178.80. October feeder cattle down 227, 180.02. November down 225, 181.27. January feeder cattle down 207, 182.90. Pressure there from higher corn prices. And in hogs, October finished 50 lower, 95.97. The rest of the trade was higher, though. December hogs up 2, 88.17. February up 22, 92.15. April lean hogs up 40, 96.35. Cash index at last look, lean hog index up 45, 98.42. And feeder cattle index up 28 at 178.20 on the session on the day Tuesday. Also, that cotton market down limit in the October contract on Tuesday, 93.54, down 400 points. December down 271 points at 93.33 on Tuesday. Jim McCormick, AgMarket.net, our guest today. Jim, one more thought specifically in this corn market. After Tuesday's close on the board, we're pretty much buttoned back up against $7. We're right up there, 690 range. What are your thoughts with this corn market? You know, breaking through maybe some of that quote unquote, you know, psychological resistance or chart resistance here around the $7 mark. I mean, what does the top side look like on the charts to you? What are your thoughts with this corn market if we can bust above $7?
Well, if you can get above $7, I think it does open up the market to make quite a technically to make a big move. Now, I think right now I'm a little bit hesitant to think it's going to break above $7. You know, a lot of that's going to hinge on the wheat. If the wheat market just makes another move back up to the $10, $11, $12 levels like it was at the apex of the fears of the war, all bets are off. But the reality is right now we are going into the gut slot of harvest. I mean, harvest is just starting to pick up. Where I'm at here in northern Illinois, we're just getting ready to start moving some beans. Central Illinois, they're starting to harvest some corn. So harvest is, I think you're going to start seeing some harvest pressure at $7 corn. With the Fed raising interest rate, that might limit the buying a little bit. And then until we get a better handle where this crop is, I do think eventually the odds are high that we're probably going to make a move above $7 corn. Producers, we're telling them, Jesse, take advantage. I mean, if you get a good basis push, do not be afraid to sell some of this corn and then maybe use like a May option strategy to re-own it into the spring, summertime. Because like I said, with that carry out at 1.2 billion, folks, we're pretty much at pipeline levels. So if the demand is understated, I mean, we really, picking out demand this year is very, very challenging. Europe's crop's probably going to get a little bit smaller. That may force more demand here. If the Ukrainian war gets out of hand, they can't export corn. That could be a problem. So the opportunity for demand to be understated is legit, as well as this crop is getting smaller. And then the other thing is just looking at the world balance sheet. It is tightening. And it's tightening despite the fact that they're projecting the world production, excuse me, not the world production, but South America production, Brazil, specifically to rebound to record all-time highs. La Nina is hanging around at this point in time, is all projections. If La Nina hangs around a little bit too longer than anticipated, and their corn crop stumbles in South America, all bets are off about where this corn market can go. Because one last note, fertilizer prices, they've gone through the roof. Mm-hmm. Can we get our hands on the fertilizer? You know, can we, you know, the odds say that we're going to plant more corn. That's what the producers are telling us. Do we have the fertilizers to plant more corn here in the United States as well as the rest of the world? So I think the volatility we've seen this summer is not going to go away as we go into the fall. If anything, it's probably going to increase as we go into 2023.
A lot of great things there to consider. I think at the end of the day, Jim, and you can stop me if I'm wrong on this, but risk management, when it comes to your risk manager right now, having options in front of you, as many options on the table for yourself as you can, is probably important just with so much volatility right now in this market.
Well, I think you said it best. I mean, the reality is when you look at the U.S. balance sheet, it's very hard not to not get very bullish, in my opinion. Like I said, a 1-2 carryout crop getting smaller. That's all the reasons the role for a producer to say, put it in the bin, lock it up, and that's wait for $8 corn. But, you know, the reality is the macro front, the inflationary plate, the higher U.S. dollar, China continuing to slow down their economy due to COVID restrictions, as well as the fear of a worldwide recession. Those are all reasons why you need to also take a pragmatic viewpoint and go ahead and lay off some risk. Take advantage of these higher prices, maybe convert to a lower risk option strategy. The other thing we're also encouraging producers to do is take a very serious look about laying off risk on this DEES-23 corn, because there's no doubt about it, Jesse, they're locking in a lot of high fertilizer prices right now. What I like to remind producers, the market does not guarantee you a profit. It does not have to give you a profit. If we are moving into a recession and all of a sudden demand is cut by 200-300 million bushels, all of a sudden this 1-2 carryout's now 1-5. There's no reason to have $7 corn if you got a 1-5 carryout. There's no reason to have beans at $15 beans plus if all of a sudden the Chinese need to cut their demand by, you know, 20, 30, you know, a chunk. So it's something you need to, you know, we're in a very good point in the fact that you can lock in profits and have it both ways, but it's something we really are encouraging guys to do simply because the risk and the volatility is going to get more and not less.
Jim, livestock markets, cattle, feels like we're kind of chopping around a little bit here in the live cattle trade. I know we have that cattle on feed report coming up Friday, so traders may be a little nervous ahead of that. Feeder cattle, no doubt pressured by higher corn prices on the day Tuesday, but this cattle complex overall feels like we're maybe just continuing to chop around a little bit. Any thoughts in the cattle trade right now?
The cattle country is kind of caught in a sideways market. We're right back up kind of the near the summer highs, but the reality is it's a tug of war. I mean, we're encouraged, you know, by all accounts, the cattle herd's getting smaller. The beef supply is going to tighten as we go into fourth quarter, into the first quarter. So that has got the buyers kind of a little bit friendly. But the reality is the consumer's being pinched by these higher inflationary costs. Food prices keep going up. Energy's come down a little bit, but the reality is consumer sentiment is definitely moving a little bit negative. And when it turns negative, it tends to hurt the demand for beef. So that's kind of keeping the cattle more of a sideways job.
Hog market maybe found a little bit of technical support here, maybe settling into a little bit of a range. I know that cash market taking a beating in recent weeks. We've talked about it coming in line with that October contract, but hogs feel like they're just kind of maybe settling into a bit of a range here as well, Jim.
Exactly. I think that's kind of where it's at. I mean, the hog market would like to see some demand, but that's where we talked about this higher currency. That's really kind of causing a problem right now, you know, to the buyers of our products. So, yeah, I would say, unfortunately, the cattle market and both the hog market are more of a sideways move than anything else at the moment.
Jim, any other final thoughts before we let you go here today? Great stuff as always. I know plenty to watch in these markets, but anything else you want to mention to producers before we run out of time?
You know, one other thing I'll just kind of mention, we are out, you know, we're past the September WASDE number, definitely threw some surprise numbers at us. We do have a big report here at the end of the month, the quarterly grain stock report, which has a history of sometimes surprising us right now. You know, right now the government's saying we got $1,525,000,000 carryout. They're going to tell us how accurate that number is at the end of the month. If for some reason they would find out 100, 150 million bushels are not there for whatever reason, the cash market was relatively strong late in the year. So it wouldn't surprise me if we found out maybe the carryout wasn't as big as we think. That will get tacked. You know, those lost bushels will just come into the balance sheet, which potentially could just tighten the new crop balance sheet that much more. So, you know, like I said, be prepared for a little bit more volatility as we go into the end of the month.
Well, Jim, if producers need some advice with all the volatility in the markets, I know they can reach out to you and the team there at agmarket.net very easily. What's going to be the best way to get a hold of you guys?
Any of the AgMarket team members can be reached at 844-424-6758 or go to the agmarket.net and sign up for a free trial of our research.
Fantastic. Well, with that, Jim McCormick, agmarket.net. Always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for joining us here today, and we will talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you again for having me on.
And again, that is Jim McCormick with AgMarket.net joining us here today on Market Talk. Coming up next after the break, we'll take a look at some of the latest headlines here in the world of agriculture. Back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk here today. Thanks for joining us, Jesse Allen with you. And again, thanks to Jim McCormick, AgMarket.net, for joining us with market analysis here on the show today. Right now, let's get caught up with some of the news headlines here in the world of agriculture before we wrap up the show today. Well, after a faster-than-average start, the U.S. corn harvest slowed last week and fell slightly behind the average pace as of Sunday, according to USDA's weekly crop progress report out Monday afternoon. The soybean harvest was also running behind its average pace, according to the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Corn harvest progress 7% done as of Sunday, up just 2 percentage points from the previous week. That puts the current harvest progress 2 percentage points behind last year and 1% behind the 5-year average. Meantime, crop condition, 52% of corn rated good to excellent nationwide, down 1% from the previous week. Soybean harvest progress at its first report of the season. NASS estimated that 3% of the crop was harvested as of Sunday, 2 percentage points behind both last year's pace and the 5-year average of 5%. Harvest has started in Nebraska, the Dakotas, Minnesota, and Indiana, but still is just getting really underway. Soybean crop condition, 55% of beans rated in good to excellent condition, down 1% from last week. Winter wheat planting progress moving ahead 11 percentage points last week to reach 21% as of Sunday. That is 1% ahead of last year and 4 percentage points ahead of the 5-year average of 17%. Meantime, spring wheat harvest has moved ahead 9 percentage points last week to reach 94% complete as of Sunday, equal to the 5-year average. Minnesota and North Dakota are 92% and 91% harvested, respectively. Beef economist Dr. Glenn Tonsor from Kansas State University works a lot on the demand equation for the beef and pork industry. Tonsor says the latest numbers from August show a challenging picture, but consumers are still trying to figure things out to enjoy beef.
August demand was down, retail up, food service. Narrowly, we have two beef categories, so ribeye steak and ground beef, a couple pork, as well as chicken breast and some other proteins that are tracked. And across the board, with the exception of plant-based patties, they were just flat for the month compared to July. The number that said they bought their protein for at-home consumption from merchandisers, so think Walmart and Target, and the number that bought it from club stores, so think Costco's and Sam's Club, both were well up. We've been talking a lot about response to inflation, but I think this is an indication that folks are shifting to where they buy their protein and probably buying a bigger volume when they buy it. I mean, if you think through the outlets I just talked about, they may have a more expensive trip, but I think they're finding ways to get the price per pound lower by buying something bigger.
Tonsor also talked about the food service side of things.
Now, this is a month-over-month statement, so when we compare August and July, food service demand, and even more narrowly, demand for dinner meals away from home, certainly was up, and that was across the board, all the proteins. That is breaking trend from the past. We also just categorized where you have your meal. The percentage that ate away from home in August was up from July. It was flat for breakfast and was up for the other two meals, so foot traffic was up through restaurants.
That's Dr. Glenn Tonsor, Kansas State University livestock market economist. Fuel prices fell again last week, but Gas Buddy says the near-term future is murky. The decline marks the 14th consecutive week of declines. The nation's average gas price declined 3.9 cents from a week ago to $3.64 a gallon. The national average is down 25.7 cents from a month ago, but still 45.9 cents higher than a year ago. The average diesel price declined 7 cents last week and stands at $4.93 per gallon. However, this week could change the downward trend, according to Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan, who says, quote, with some issues arising in the Plains and Great Lakes states as the transition to winter gasoline begins, I think we have the best potential to see the weekly trend of falling prices snapped, end quote. West Coast states are also continuing to see increases as unexpected refinery issues continue to percolate, preventing a downward move. DeHaan added, quote, diesel prices should continue to ease after a much-needed jump in inventories last week, end quote. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack traveled to Pepin County, Wisconsin recently to talk about the recent funding announcement for the Climate Smart Commodity Partnership opportunity. He says farmers are going to benefit from the 70 projects to be accepted in the first funding pool.
So we're excited about this opportunity. We think that there are 16 projects or so in Wisconsin where producers will be able to benefit. I think there's a way in which they will be able to ensure that the data that they're collecting is accumulated and provides direction and help. We're going to learn a lot from these projects. 70 projects, $2.8 billion committed to it, but it sounds like a lot of money, but there were over $20 billion of requests, over 1,000 applications, because farmers, ranchers, and forested landowners, producers are very interested in this and very ready for it.
The USDA is already looking at applications for the second round of funding, which will assist smaller projects than the first round did.
Well, we're in the process now of looking at those. These are requesting significantly less money. They may be shorter in time as well. Most of the large grants are up to 3 to 5 years in time. So we'll take a look at those. The idea here is, I think, to have the same 70 experts review those as reviewed the larger grant applications. And we're looking for the same kind of opportunities here. Are underserved producers, beginning farmers, veterans, minority farmers, are they included? Are farmers who are early adopters, they're not penalized? Will there be financial incentives, or is it voluntary? What kind of partnerships have you developed with universities? How are you going to report and verify results? We'll take a look and we'll try to fund as many of the quality applications as we can.
One topic that did come up is rural broadband access, which would allow more producers to take part in these programs. Vilsack says it's coming soon.
Well, I think high-speed internet's coming to the countryside because of the bipartisan infrastructure law. We're going to have a significant amount of investment over the course of the next couple of years to ensure that people have access to that very important tool in the 21st century.
Again, that's USDA Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack. Legislation introduced last week would remove burdensome government regulations from the trucking industry, according to South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds. The South Dakota Republican introduced the Trucking Regulations Unduly Constricting Known Service Providers, or TRUCS Act. Rounds says the regulations are burdensome to agriculture, school districts, and trucking companies. In 2012, then-President Obama signed into law legislation that set in motion a new rule that created a requirement for entry-level driver training. The final rulemaking went into effect earlier this year. All new drivers who wish to obtain their CDL must now complete entry-level driver training, adding a burdensome requirement at a time when the American Trucking Association estimates a nationwide trucker shortage of 80,000 drivers. The bill would allow states to issue a new small business restricted CDL, so entry-level driver training requirements would not affect small businesses with 9 CDLs or less. The U.S. Custom Harvesters have endorsed the legislation. Well, that's a look at some of the latest news in the world of agriculture. We're out of time here today on Market Talk. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, joining us to give us his market perspective. We'll have the Fed interest rate hike announcement, we assume, and much more to talk about. Have a fantastic rest of your day. I'm Jesse Allen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up to date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.